There was a Muslim cleric by the name of Fethullah Gulen who lived in the Poconos, and he was a CIA asset, and they had designed this parallel state inside of Turkey, and they facilitated a coup d'etat. It failed. And at the time, I remember thinking I would much rather have the repressive government of Recep Tayyip Erdogan than an American puppet installed in his stead.
He's not going to say Erdogan apology to? Hell yes, my king! Yes, the Young Turks in action! Jake is so proud. The Manchurian candidate is waking up.
Are we watching, like, authoritarian leftism develop in real time?
You understand that he's giving the argument right here for why the re-education camps and everything have to exist. It's understandable why countries experiencing a certain level of turmoil would have to crack down to ensure stability.
Oh, is that a capitalist? You don't support the current regime?
Well, maybe we need to engage in a little bit of stability maxing, and that just might mean some camp maxing for you and your family.
Talk a little bit about this idea of exiles. I lived in Florida. You said your first stop was Miami. I don't know if you talked to a lot of exiles on your way before you got
to the Gusanos.
Like, these were the landowners, the property owners that lost.
Oh, the Gusanos. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. My inner racist almost came out of me. What a crazy fucking thing to just say, but okay.
Stop with Miami. I don't know if you talked to a lot of exiles on your way before you got to Cuba. They're hardcore. Like, these were the landowners, the property owners that lost their property when this revolution took place. They're in Miami. They want their country back, and they are hardcore Republicans.
She doesn't even know the racist stereotypes, right? She's such a fucking retard. Why is this stupid cunt even talking about the Cuban people that exist in Miami are crazy fucking retarded conservatives because they hate socialism. They don't want to go take Cuba back. What, does she think most of these people are, like, had land and they're waiting to go back and get and reown their plantations? Like, holy shit, she doesn't even know the right racist stereotypes. What a fucking idiot. Oh my God, Hassan Slop.
We're serious about our dogs.
Oh,
we're
yeah.
serious dog people.
Yeah,
I
am too.
And
and we're serious about Michael Jackson Thriller.
Wait,
we're serious.
No,
about
no, no,
Michael
and
Thriller.
Michael in general.
Don't you dare disrespect.
But okay. What? So you use the shock collar on your dog? Was
no,
that the big?
I have a e collar. That's a vibration collar, but she didn't even have it on that day. But it's one.
Oh my God, dude, the codes, the way that he speaks around people, God, fuck, I hate everything about this guy. I am a hater.
One of those things where, when I tell you, you'll see when this episode comes out, like, I have unbelievable stalkers that have spent almost 7 years of their life at this point, almost 8 years of their life at this point, watching every little thing that I do and, like, try to clip it and just, like, blast it out into the ether. And there are content creators that...
It's out of context, it's clipped, out of context, clipped, out of context, clipped.
Like, play a role in this as well, where there's an entire economy around
It's a clip economy, there's a Hassan Piker clip economy. Wait, so you just used the collar to calm your dog without actually turning on the buzz and people got angry? Is that what you're saying?
She didn't even have the collar on that day. So,
but
like,
he has used the collar,
but,
right?
But she's trained. Like, she...
I feel like this story has changed like five times from she didn't have the collar on to she had one on, but it was a vibration collar to she had one on and it is a shock collar, but the prongs were removed and they're taped over. I feel like this story has changed so many times.
She's off leash trained.
Right.
And she has a vibration collar that I use to when I'm out in the park to like do recall, like to call back to get her to come back.
I know people who use those.
Have you felt them?
They're not very intense.
No. There's shock collars as well. And I have literally put a shock collar on myself to do like a bit before with another content creator. So like I know. I know how it feels.
So what is this? If it's not, the e-collar, if it's not a, if it doesn't shock,
it just vibrates.
Just vibrates, right?
It just vibrates.
This is going to come off as a self-glaze. I'm sorry, I can't. I just can't. If I get a question, the way that my mind works is I'm trying to get to the substance of the issue that somebody's asking me. That generally, like, that's where my brain is going. Now, I'm not always perfect. It could be that for some reason I'm just incorrect at assuming what they're trying to get at, or maybe we're in a heated back and forth. And obviously your emotions can flare, and so maybe you get a little bit more defensive than you should. Like, these happen. I'm not perfect. But generally, like, if somebody comes up to me and, you know, it's like, did you go out yesterday? And I have to give them one answer, and there's a gun held to both of our heads, and both of us are going to be killed if I give the wrong answer, okay? And the guy's like, did you go out today? And I remember I did go out onto my balcony, but I didn't go, like, out of the apartment. I would say, no, I didn't go out yesterday. Even though, like, I technically did go out, but not really, right? That's not really what he's asking. I feel like some people's minds are at this default, like, when I get asked a question, it's like you immediately go to the most pivot, irrelevant, peripheral, excuse-making thing, but it's, like, natural. Like, they don't even have to think about it. Like, there's so much diversion here, but it has to be second nature at this point.
You just used the collar to calm your dog without actually turning on the buzz and people got angry? Is that what you're saying?
She didn't even have the collar on that day.
So, but like, he has used the collar,
but,
right?
But I have a. She's trained. Like, she's.
I didn't have the collar on that day. First, he's thinking like, okay, I didn't have the collar on that day, so the story can't be credible. But I do have a collar for her. But I don't really want to admit that she's trained. So that boom, she's trained. I don't have to think about the collar. It's like, oh,
she's off leash trained,
right?
Okay.
And she has a vibration collar that I use to.
Okay, so wait, well, she does have a vibration collar. Okay,
when I'm out in the park to like.
Okay, when we're out in the park, that makes sense. She doesn't have a leash. Okay, vibration
like,
collar. This is good.
Recall, like to do call back to get her to come back.
I know people who use those.
Yeah, have you felt them?
They're not very intense.
No. There's shock collars as well.
Now he's going to talk about shock collars. He's on video, by the way. With a guy who did shock collar training with Kyle. Like, we've seen this in the past. We know this, right? So now we're back on shock collars. Okay, this sounds really bad. This is a bad thing. How can I make it less bad?
And I have literally put a shock collar on myself.
I've shocked myself before. Who is he asking, bro? No one even asked this question. Why would you even volunteer this information to make it all sound like less bad? Like, it's so much, like, second nature diversion and pivoting. It just drives me crazy.
To do, like, a bit before with another content creator. So, like, I know... I know how it feels.
So what is...
Like, who even asked that? What?
This, if it's not, the e-collar, if it's not a... if it,
just,
it doesn't shock.
It just vibrates.
Just vibrates, right?
It just vibrates.
They're gonna watch this and say you're a liar.
Yeah, I don't really care. It doesn't matter.
But that's it? That's the crux of this?
But the crux of it is, like, they pieced up, like, so many different clips to be like, oh, every time he's moving his arm and, like, my dog moves in any way, they're like, oh, he has a button on his desk that he's hitting to like zap his dog. And then they crafted this like insane theory that like I'm forcing her to stay behind me. And it's like dogs sleep in the same place. They want to be next to their owners. You have a dog.
I have never seen a video where Kyle looks like she wants to be next to Hassan, but okay.
I do.
Yeah.
He likes his bed, right next to my bed.
Exactly. And so they crafted this elaborate scheme where they were like, oh, he's like zapping his dog to stay in one location in front of the camera. I don't give a shit if she's on camera or not.
Like, I like how he says, I don't give a shit if she's on camera or not, but he literally has a Kaya cam. What?
Well, for that specific reason.
I don't give a shit if she's on camera or not. Okay.
Like, I don't, you know, she has a bed behind me.
Are you messed up at all by this? The amount of, like, talk around
you? I'm so used to it.
Oh, my God. And then he does this thing where, like, none of it bothers me. I'm so used to all of it, bruh.
I hear that. Like, I don't think Hassan is arguing that, like, Israel's the devil or that Israeli people are evil in any way.
What? He's not even doing the right propaganda lines because, like I said, I think the pod people, I think, are second-order retards. I don't think they're intentionally crazy, tanky commie slurpers like the Majority Report people would be or Crystal Ball and Kyle Kulinski are. I think these guys are just, they're politically unsavvy when it comes to this realm of stuff. So they just don't realize the apology they're engaging in. The correct propaganda line, if this guy was like a tier one slurper, he should be saying, Hassan doesn't hate the Jewish people. He's not anti-Jew. But he doesn't even know the right dog whistles because he's so fucking stupid.
I hear that. Like, I don't think Hassan is arguing that, like, Israel's the devil or that Israeli people are evil in any way.
In a totally just world, any kind of, regardless of your background, any kind of fucking Zionist tendency should be treated in the same way as being a fucking rabid neo-Nazi. And you shouldn't even let someone at your...
I don't know who made this. This is a shit fucking clip. Whoever made this should feel embarrassed about themselves. I'm pretty sure there are videos of Hassan literally talking about, like, the citizens of Israel, because that's the new talking point, is that the Israeli government is the representative of the Israeli people, and that most Israelis are crazy fucking neo-Nazi far right or whatever. Like, that's the talking point. They did a Zionist one here, but I'm pretty sure he's literally said Israeli people. Ugh, I hate these pod people, dude. Kill me. Fuck me.
Now, Hassan Piker, who is one of the leading voices that bridges young people, the digital generation, progressive politics, and culture, has a massive platform. He's got over 11.3 million combined followers, including 1.9 million on YouTube, 3.1 million on Twitch. That's why I said our Twitchies are having their moment. Okay, y'all Twitchies, this is your day. And for a lot of particularly younger people, he is becoming a primary source of political commentary on domestic and international politics, whether the Democratic Party and Fox like it or not. Now, his latest venture is sure to provoke even more outrage. Here's the first minute of his mini doc on his investigative report and trip
to our next war target.
I don't know if I can watch this. I'm so sorry. His investigative...
Cuba.
As we speak, there are 11 million people living 90 miles off the coastline of the United States of America in a Caribbean island nation known as Cuba, experiencing a severe crisis. Everyday life is being brought to a screeching halt.
I'm so sorry. Please look at the black person voice. That's all I want to say. Please, God, the AI black person voice.
There are nationwide blackouts caused by a total collapse of the country's electrical grid. There's a shortage of food and medicine. They can't pump drinking water. Cuba has been starved of the most important resource to make modern life work. Oil. For over 60 years, the United States has maintained a trade embargo against Cuba. Under the embargo, it's nearly impossible for foreign companies to invest and do business in Cuba while trading with the United States. For years, I've wanted to visit Cuba. I wanted to learn about the problems caused by the embargo. I wanted to see a socialist society in person. Last month, I took the opportunity to go as part of a humanitarian mission to bring aid that my government won't. I'd be accompanying Progressive International alongside hundreds of others from around the world. Activists.
She should start the interview. How many lives did you save?
Journalists, artists, and politicians will be coming to the island by boat and plane to deliver over 40 tons of necessary supplies, food, medicine, and medical equipment. Our first stop is Miami, Florida.
And Hassan Piker joins me now. Hey, Hassan, how are you? Welcome to the show.
As we speak.
Oh.
Can you hear me?
Hey, we got you. How are
okay,
you?
Okay, perfect. Hi, thank you for having me. That was a fantastic introduction. And I'm honored to be here. This is very exciting. It's I put myself down as dangerous radical in my title, but I guess your producers changed that and they thought, you know, it's better to put Twitch streamer and political commentator down there.
I didn't see dangerous radical in the, I'm gonna have to talk to my producers because I would have preferred to say dangerous radical. I'm gonna read you the intro. Joining me now is dangerous radical Hassan Piker, who scares the crap out of everybody left and right. Before I get to the Cuba piece, why do you suppose people are so obsessed with you? Why are you that dude that's causing all that conversation? What are you doing?
I think to explain it in the shortest way possible, I'm unbought and unbossed. And that is precisely the reason why I'm uncontrollable. I'm only accountable to my own opinion, to my own integrity, to my own audience. And that is a very frustrating phenomena that,
as he streams on one of the largest streaming platforms in the world, owned by Amazon, owned by Jeff Bezos. Oh my fucking God.
Steven, he's unbought, unpaid for, except he did a contract with Twitch, right?
Bossed.
A lot of the Democratic Party has never had to deal with for the longest time. They were the gatekeepers of appropriate conversations, and they could just cast aside voices on the sidelines that wanted more from the Democrats, that wanted a more responsive party, that wanted a party to focus on the working class. They could determine the conditions. They could determine what kind of concessions they would give to the working class. And now they have a megaphone that doesn't have any sort of corporate sponsorships whatsoever and is entirely funded by his own audience.
Did Hassan, does he no longer do any gaming sponsors or anything before? When was the last sponsor he did?
I mean, it wasn't that long ago. I remember he did a gotcha sponsor.
Okay. Is that not a corporation or?
Okay. You wouldn't get it, man.
I wouldn't.
And that is terrifying for a lot of people. And of course, one of the major issues that even Ken Martin was just talking to the Pod Johns about is this autopsy that I think we all know revealed a lot of information about
Israel.
The Democratic Party's allegiance to Israel's genocide and how
that
allegiance to Israel's genocide. Jesus, fuck me in the ass. Christ, what a retarded fucking statement. What an insanely propaganda heavy statement. My God.
May have played a really negative role. And a huge role in the loss that Kamala Harris withstood in front of an incompetent fascist by the name of Donald Trump.
Do you consider yourself a Democrat or are you DSA? Like, do you hold to a political party?
I'm organization agnostic, is what I say. I mean, I work.
Who is writing these? Did he get a fucking buzzword slang writer or something? I'm unbought and unbossed. I'm organization agnostic. The fuck?
Most commonly with the DSA, but I work with the Democrats, and the DSA obviously filters their electeds through the Democratic Party's machine. But I work with the PSL as well, Party for Socialism and Liberation. I work with anybody and everybody that wants to fight fascism in this country. I'm an anti-fascist first and foremost.
Yeah. So you know what's interesting? I was reading your bio, and what's interesting is I'm Generation X. I guess you'd be an alpha or millennial. I feel like Generation X, we're kind of the last captured generation, if that makes sense. Like, we are the generation that was pretty much like captured by the Reagan economy and sort of the Reagan culture. And really, we're either like Democrats or Republicans. I feel like I even am placing my own, you know, kidults who are your age and younger. But they're not captured. They are not necessarily they don't really have any fealty to a political party. They're more ideologically kind of free, right? And so they kind of look at politics in a different way. And so I think that is where this sort of intense critique of the Israel thing is coming from. It's where the, you know, critique of the wars are coming from. Do you feel that the way that you think about Israel and Palestine, which weirdly enough is the way I think about it too, but I was lonely alone in Generation X, most of us didn't think that way. Yeah. I was kind of on my own there. But do you think that the way that you're thinking about it is the common parlance, right?
Yeah, it wasn't necessarily the case, especially shortly after October 7. But now it's become the universal position. There's clearly a generational divide here as well. Obviously, for the generation 50 and above, they definitely have more loyalty
to the most moral democracy in the Middle East, the only democracy in the Middle East, and that sort of narrative building has been very effective in capturing the attention of the older generation. But for people under the age of 50, it's gone. It's done. People look at this as a malign foreign actor that is causing tremendous instability, tremendous harm in the region. And people simply don't understand why we have to have this unlimited loyalty pledge to this foreign country. And it's also created a very interesting media environment, especially paired up with how much misinformation runs amok in a system where we don't really have consensus reality any longer, where a lot of people start making up their own minds on why. They start making up their own theories as to why people why our politicians are so unresponsive to our demands, and why they have this this loyalty to the state of Israel. And that's where, you know, anti-Semitic conspiracies start manifesting left and right.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I think that is probably why you're not shameable on, you know, issues. I mean, I notice whenever you do an interview, people ask
the anti-Semitism actually comes from the center left.
Hamas, like, this is the thing that happens with a lot of people who are on the left, and then you're asked to, you know, justify, you know, is Hamas the worst thing in the world? And you're like, well, Israel's killed more people, and you kind of leave it there on an interview where you did that. But I think
oh my God, it's so stupid. I'm sorry. So worst is who's killed the most people in the Middle East? You want to tag Israel with that tag? Seriously? Really? That's the worst one there? If we just go by numbers.
I want to talk a little bit about Cuba, because this is the other issue where, for people my age, it's just baked into the cake that, you know, Cuba is an authoritarian country. Jason actually went to Cuba as well. We're going to put up some video. I cut together a few of our still, Jason. We went in 2017 when President Obama opened it up and allowed us briefly, you could go. And, you know, I watched your Cuba documentary. It was very well done. You, Ryan Graham, and some others went down. And one of the things I noticed that is very different about the narrative that you were presenting and the narrative that I've always understood and even experienced in Cuba is that Cuba is an authoritarian place. Like, I don't know if you experienced this part of it, that there are men with long guns watching you. Like, you are on video cam all the time and being watched. Like, did you get that sense, or did you only get the sense of, like, the struggle, which is what you really well explained?
No.
Yeah. No, as a matter of fact, in comparison to China, who I visited last year, I would say that their surveillance state was virtually non-existent. And I actually had some independent journalists that work.
How do you know? What do you think that a surveillance state is like? The guy is standing outside with binoculars just staring at you? What?
In Cuba, some of which have even been arrested by the Cuban government in the past. I asked them about their experiences in Cuba. They've worked all around Latin American countries, including in Venezuela. And they were saying that the Cuban government's surveillance initiatives are actually far less comprehensive than what you would see even in a place like America. Of course, the American surveillance state is much more insidious and nowhere near as hands-on. Or at least it doesn't show itself until it needs to. Far as the authoritarianism goes, I think these countries are, especially Cuba, it's 90 miles off the coastline of the United States of America, and it's been in a state of unlimited warfare by the largest hegemonic superpower since it committed the ultimate crime of fighting and winning sovereignty and dignity for its people. The initial Cuban revolution wasn't necessarily a communist or a socialist revolution. It was an agrarian revolution. It was a national revolution. It was a social revolution. But it became a communist country after, a couple years in to the initial revolution. And throughout that process, they've always wanted to maintain decent relations with America. They know they have to. And yet America has had unbelievable revenge fantasies and chose to punish Cuba relentlessly and even push Cuba into the hands of the USSR in many respects. So having all of that in mind, I think, I guess I understand why countries that are in a constant state of warfare, especially poorer and smaller countries, are going to engage in some level of repression because they're worried about instability born out of CIA interventions, quite frankly. And in comparison,
I'm just saying this now because I don't give a fuck. I don't care because fuck politics, okay? But like, you understand that this is the precursor. I can't say anything. He's laying the groundwork foundation. Are we watching like authoritarian leftism develop in real time? You understand that he's giving the argument right here for why the education, the re-education camps and everything have to exist, right? Like, it's understandable why countries experiencing a certain level of turmoil would have to crack down to ensure stability, right? These are like nice sounding words, but like, what does he mean when he says turmoil, right? In his definition, this is going to be like ideological incongruency, right? Oh, is that a capitalist? Oh, you don't support the current regime? Well, maybe we need to engage in a little bit of stability maxing, okay? And that just might mean some camp maxing for you and your family. It's crazy.
He said he supports, like, re-education camps and stuff?
Yeah, he has, but he doesn't talk to any politically sophisticated actors. This lady's, no offense, I don't know who she is. She sounds like I don't want to make more enemies. She sounds fucking retarded. I'm sorry. I don't know why she's doing this interview. Jesus Christ.
Countries that are in a constant state of warfare, especially poorer and smaller countries, are going to engage in some level of repression because they're worried about instability born out of CIA interventions, quite frankly. And in comparison to many of these countries that I've read about and many of these countries that I've been to, I would say that the Cuban surveillance state or the Cuban authoritarianism is outright marginal, inconsequential even. Of course, there are still political prisoners and people that get arrested. But
just like in the United States.
Then I always pair that up with, you know, my country, the United States of America. And I think about 3,500 college students, protesters that were arrested in the encampments that I personally visited, that I saw these kind people, these brave people that got not only violently apprehended by police forces and had their careers put in jeopardy, but also got physically attacked by counter protesters, like in the case of, in the UCLA encampments, where I watched counter protesters that don't go to UCLA storm the student encampment that was demonstrating peacefully in the quad and throw fireworks at these students, brutalize them with 2x4s, and even deploy lab rats. To this day, we don't know what they were trying to do, but there was a backpack. Someone brought a backpack full of rats and just released those rats into the student encampment. So potentially even biological warfare to say.
Oh my God.
He's a must now too. Oh my fucking God. Kill me, fam. Kill me.
I mean, to think that this is happening in Westwood, Los Angeles, California is unbelievable. And yet I experienced it. I saw it happen in real time. So I think it's not a justification for state repression in any way, shape, or form, but it's more so reality that the United States of America does not need to engage in this level of repression as the dominant force around the planet, and yet it chooses to do so. And then, you know, it feels insincere of me to go and criticize a country that is in a constant state of economic warfare and maybe even potentially direct hot war now, as Donald Trump is threatening, to turn around and say, oh, they're very repressive in comparison to the United States.
You know, what's so interesting is that, like, all of the narratives that I grew up in my generation and the boomers ahead of me grew up with, Donald Trump has destroyed them all just by the activities of our government, right? I mean, when we can't talk about repression, because as you said, the repression here is so stark. I mean, people here are being put in concentration camps and in private prisons, and there are gray vans driving up to people and throwing random people into the van because they have an accent. It's really hard to then make the argument. Because
I can't listen to Americans talk about the world. Oh my God. I actually just can't do it. It's crazy to me how fucking retarded the average American is. Like, America experiences basically the same type of repressive single state party rule that all these other authoritarian dictator states experience. It's actually just as bad here because I saw a cop on video attack another citizen. Like, oh my God, kill me.
You know, like I said, when we went to Cuba, we saw the men with the Kalashnikovs. You know, we were like, oh, this is really weird. There's 3 TV channels. But then here, okay, there's not 3 TV channels, but like 3 billionaires control all the TV channels. So it's like the same things are happening. And I think about, I want to talk a little bit about this idea of exiles. I lived in Florida. You said your first stop was Miami. I don't know if you talked to a lot of exiles on your way before you got to Cuba.
Oh, the Gusanos.
Like, these were the landowners, the property owners that lost.
Oh, the Gusanos. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. My inner racist almost came out of me. It's okay. All right. Hold on. Let's. What a crazy fucking thing to just say, but okay.
Stop was Miami. I don't know if you talked to a lot of exiles on your way before you got to Cuba. They're hardcore. Like, these were the landowners, the property owners that lost their property when this revolution took place. They're in Miami. They want their country back, and they are hardcore Republicans, right? Your family is from Thessaloniki, which is, to me, one of the fun things about that is where Paul was writing to the Thessalonians.
She doesn't even know the racist stereotypes, right? She's such a fucking retard. Why is this stupid cunt even talking about the Cuban people that exist in Miami are crazy fucking retarded conservatives because they hate socialism? They don't want to go take Cuba back. What, does she think most of these people are like had land and they're waiting to go back and get and re-own their plantations? Like, holy shit. She doesn't even know the right racist stereotypes. What a fucking idiot. Kill me. I don't think I've ever heard in my entire all of my Cuban, my mom and dad are ride or die MAGA, okay? All of my Cuban family is fucking ride or die MAGA. I don't think I've ever heard a Cuban in my entire life say, I want to go back to Cuba after we take it back from Cuba. I've never heard that in my entire life. Maybe there's a group of Cubans that say that. I've never heard it ever, ever. The only time I've heard things about like, getting rid of the administration is usually because I say, like, oh, I want, like, more family that are still over there to come over to the United States. I don't know, man. This is crazy. It's possible she's never talked to a Cuban in her entire fucking life. That's possible, too.
In Turkey, I'm quite sure that Bibi Netanyahu, Smotrich, and Ben-Gvir want to steal your family's country and take that part of it and put it in Greater Israel, as far as I knew.
Turkey, the victim? Wait.
And Ben-Gvir want to. That is where Paul was writing to the Thessalonians in Turkey. I'm quite sure that Bibi Netanyahu, Smotrich, and Ben-Gvir want to steal your family's country and take that part of it and put it in Greater Israel, as far as I knew.
After going all the way and taking how much of Lebanon and Syria would have to be taken to even start to take parts of Turkey? What is she talking about? It's okay.
Think about the Turks, man.
It's Greece, his country. Or was she talking about the where the letter was written to was owned by Greece before the Turks conquered it or whatever?
But so that's where your family came from. You're from New Jersey, but I'm just saying your family. We interviewed your uncle Janku. I didn't know it was your uncle until literally like 2 weeks ago. And I'm like, my mind is blown. But you know, as yourself, Turkey is one of those countries, right? It's got a repressive government. Erdogan,
yeah,
is a terrible person. And the exile community says, overthrow it, replace it with something different.
Same thing. I don't. Iranian, for the record, right?
You don't. I watched that piece that you did on it. So talk about that.
Yeah, so I can't go back to Turkey. My whole family's there. My uncle passed away.
He's such a fucking liar. Oh my God, kill me.
Last year, and I couldn't go to his funeral because there's a very serious threat that if I do go back to Turkey, I would go to jail. And I know that the American government would never demand my release, considering that, you know, the current American government is not exactly too fond of me either. I've been detained by ICE in the past.
Oh my God. Detained by ICE? Is he talking about the DHS TSA? That's not ICE that does the interview in there, is it? Or is it? I don't remember. He's talking about that event, though. Oh, my God.
I don't think that's ICE who does it.
I'm trying to remember.
Is it? I thought it would be like Border Patrol.
Yeah, like CPP. That's not under ICE, is it? It might be. I don't remember. Hold on, let me check.
They're different things, I think, technically. Well, ICE was not funded, and so was CBP, so I would assume that they were different then, yeah?
Yeah, but I just don't know if... I don't know if CBP is under ICE or... Because, like, for instance, like the Department of Homeland Security is the top branch for all of these things, and the ICE is within the Department of Homeland Security. I just don't remember.
So, I, in spite of all of that, there was a coup that took place that was facilitated. At this point, it's damn near assured that it was the CIA. There was a Muslim cleric by the name of Fethullah Gulen. It was a coup that had been detained by ICE in the past. Released. So, I, in spite of all of that, there was a coup that took place that was facilitated. At this point, it's damn near assured that it was the CIA. There was a Muslim cleric by the name of Fethullah Gulen, who lived in the Poconos, and he was a CIA asset. And they had designed this parallel state inside of Turkey, and they facilitated a coup d'etat. It failed. And at the time, I remember thinking, I would much rather have the repressive government of Recep Tayyip Erdogan than an American puppet installed in his stead, because at least, like, regardless of how much...
He's now going to say, I don't want to apologize to. Hell yes, my king. Yes, the Young Turks in action. Cenk is so proud. The Manchurian candidate is waking up.
Recep Tayyip Erdogan still is a servant of American empire. There is still some semblance of sovereignty there in the decision-making process, as opposed to a CIA-installed puppet like Fethullah Gulen. And I wasn't alone in this, because regardless of his unpopularity at the time, there was a referendum that took place in the immediate aftermath of this coup d'etat, where Erdogan was able to, by referendum, change the Turkish constitution to a presidential system so he could actually secure more power and power that he is still using to this day. And that referendum gave him the popular majority vote. And the reason for why that happened was because people said, we hate Erdogan, but we would rather have Erdogan than someone who is a puppet of Western forces. This, of course, this calculation, of course, doesn't necessarily factor in the reality that Erdogan is a Western puppet himself as well. But still, there are sovereign decisions that he makes, as opposed to someone who would be directly in the hands of the American state.
It's a NATO country! It's literally a NATO country now! What, there are more American dick sucks than Israel is? What does he mean by that?
Well, I mean, Iran is the same thing. I mean, there are Iranian exiles who were doing the Trump dance. They were so excited that we bombed Iran, that we've invaded Iran. You know, you talk about the Iran war a lot on your stream. Your generation is the one that's being asked to fight this.
Does
you know, they've now reinstalled it. They've now,
I don't know.
Now, for the first time, made signing up for the draft automatic. Selective Service will now just automatically scoop everyone up, including undocumented people in it. Are you worried about a draft?
Oh, well, I'm 34. I'm about to be 35. So I feel like it's probably not going to get to me.
Oh, no, but they put up 42, my friend. It's up to 42.
I've seen that. But also, the other side of it, of course, is that, you know, I'm a dangerous trader. So they must be really desperate if they're trying to get my old ass in there. having said that, am I worried about a draft? Yes and no. I'm always worried about a draft. But there is also a sense of opportunity, because part of the reason why I think the American population has been unresponsive to all of our military adventurism overseas is because we have a draft right now. It's the poverty draft. Either people join the military because their family members were a part of it, and it's like a generational thing, or they do it because they want a semblance of upward social mobility that the military offers. In other countries, of course, these amenities are not really amenities at all. A free college education, or a college education that actually has the state paying you to go get educated.
One of the things that I do appreciate about Europe that America really needs to figure out, that Hassan is completely right here, is if you've traveled a lot, a lot of Americans don't know this, but Hassan has well traveled. If you go to like France, Germany, this was definitely true in Sweden, definitely true in the United Kingdom, because they have free education, because they have free healthcare. There's not really like poor or middle class or wealthy people. Everybody's just really well off. I think that was one of the most shocking things. Like if you're walking through London, like basically everybody's more or less kind of like the same, like well off. Going through, like Western, Southern Europe, especially in Eastern Europe, It's actually really bad. All of those people are mentally retarded, and the Soviet Union needs to come back and take them all over. But throughout all of Europe, where they have free education and healthcare, there's basically not much class divide at all. Like, everybody's more or less like the same economically. It's like really, really awesome. I really appreciate that. So he's super, super dead on right there, 100%.
Are not really amenities at all, free college education, or a college education that actually has the state paying you to go get educated, and free healthcare are provided to every single citizen in most OECD nations.
Mm-hmm. That's true, too. In all of these countries, you get paid to go to school. It's crazy. It's actually not that, like, some of these countries have some of the most competitive, the high school to college scores ever in order to actually get it paid for. That's not true, actually. What I just said was fucking bullshit. Every single person has the opportunity to get paid infinitely to go to school and education and everything. It's amazing, yeah.
Conditionally, here in the United States of America, you have to sign the dotted line and sell your soul to the Pentagon so you can go wage wars, sometimes at the behest of petro-capitalist pedophiles and other times at the behest of
petro-capitalist pedophiles.
Of Israel, awesome, even, man. Like we're seeing here in Iran. And that's the only way you can get these amenities, right? If there was a draft, on the other hand, it would force a lot of people to be more responsive and force a lot of people's hand into actually taking action like we saw in the Vietnam era.
I'm trying to think. Were we in war? They did. People were really active for the Vietnam shit. I think we were only in Vietnam for, was it 1 year?
Oh, they hated that shit.
2 years?
No.
And then they, are you saying it was longer than that? What, 3 years?
I'm pretty sure it was pretty long.
Pretty long? What do you mean? He said the people were really active, though, for Vietnam and shit. It must have only been
20 years, even.
Well, yeah, well, 20 years I think is a little long, but wasn't it around, I think it was around 10-ish years, depending on when you get. But I like how he's like, well, yeah, if we drafted people, they would definitely be a lot more anti-whatever. Vietnam was like a fucking decade, bro.
And
at least I think people count the when we left, like,
maybe, yeah,
and when late. And our, yeah,
a lot of people's hand into act.
Some people started saying 19 years. It was at least 10 years. It was long. Okay,
actually taking action like we saw in the Vietnam era. That's the reason why there's, I mean, that's at least one of the reasons why there isn't really a massive, robust anti-war movement that's active in the streets right now. That, and of course, the unbelievable amount of suppression that both the Biden administration and the Trump administration put on the pro-Palestinian movement.
Yeah. You said in one of your posts, or that I think it was on your stream, that you voted for Kamala Harris. You called yourself a harm reduction voter. She may run again. There are lots of people who are teaming up on the Cory Booker and others.
He said it before. He absolutely did not. No, he didn't. Absolutely, he did not. But he said he has.
What case would need to be made to you to support a Democrat in 2028? What would you need to see them have on their agenda?
Well, I think they need to be anti-genocide. I think that they need to commit to holding Israel accountable, not just on arms embargo, but I want them to also hold Israel accountable for this genocide that they committed. This would also obviously include holding our American administrations accountable.
Ooh, okay, he's starting to move closer to that position that all of you fucking retards in chat said that I was delusional for saying that he had, where it's not just enough to be anti-Israel at home. Now you have to, like, advocate for fucking regime change or whatever other crazy shit. Like he wants to go much further.
Accountable for this genocide that they committed. This would also obviously include holding our American administrations accountable as well, and not just on the issue of Israel not abiding by the pre-existing laws, like the Leahy Law, that dictates that no arms trades can take place if a country is found in violation of human rights with the American arms that we're shipping and we're selling. And Israel certainly has been violating all rules in the rule book with the weapons that we've trafficked to Israel. So I also think that accountability is necessary on the domestic issues as well. I want an American president who will say, look, there's been far too much graft, far too much grifting in this country, and we are no longer going to let these corrupt people steal your money and engage in these sorts of schemes with impunity. We are going to hold them to account. John Ossoff, regardless of my criticisms of John Ossoff, has actually done a very convincing case on this issue in Georgia. He talks about this extensively, and I think that's going to be a major issue in the midterms and certainly in the upcoming election as well. I think that there's a lot of appetite in the base for someone who will actually say, enough is enough. We have to hold these people accountable, because if we don't, if no one feels like there's any accountability, then they're going to continue committing crimes. And I think it's totally ridiculous that we've allowed the wealthy to get away with stealing our resources, our productive output, for far too long. And now they're more bold, they're more brazen with their rampant theft. So someone's got to put an end to that. So I hope that a Democratic politician can commit to that as well. And then on top of that, I want a politician that will uplift the working class, the material conditions of the working class. I want a politician that is truly anti-war, a politician that says, we have spent far too much money on the military-industrial complex to wage wars overseas. It's time to focus on building this country. It's time to make America truly great.
Holy shit, the rambling, the yapping.
That means we are going to focus on healing ourselves. We're going to focus on Medicare for all. We're going to focus on educating ourselves and become a competitive country in the global marketplace again. That means free college education for all, unconditionally, without any without having the need to sign your soul to the Department of Defense. And those are amenities that we absolutely could provide to every single citizen. Like, we are the wealthiest nation on the planet, after all, the wealthiest nation that's ever existed in the history of the planet. So I find it unbelievable that Democrats can't come together and unite around this convincing message that would be very popular with not just the existing base of the Democrats, but very popular with the independents, and certainly even with Republicans too, regardless of how cult-like they are currently.
Yeah. Before I let you go, the Republicans seem to be uniting around a message that it is the left that is politically dangerous and that is using dangerous rhetoric to put Republicans' lives in danger. Around this White House Correspondents' Dinner situation, they're trying to say, aha, this proves that, you know, there really is a left-wing attempt to attack Republicans. They have put you in that. They've said that you are dangerous to them, that your rhetoric is dangerous. What do you make of this? Because it's stupid. I just played a whole 2-minute clip of, wait, go on. No, go on.
Yeah, no, it's true. I am the danger. We are the danger. And I need them to understand this. We're dangerous to the corporate bottom line. We're dangerous to profit seekers. And that's the only thing that our politicians and many in the media care about right now. So in some respects, they are correct. The danger is what might happen to profit seekers who want to paywall health care. And I don't mean like, divine retribution or punishment of any sort. I mean the worst punishment of all, where they can no longer justify multi-million-dollar salaries. I am a danger to those who...
What does that even mean? True. But also, what does that even mean? The true danger... where they can no longer justify multi-million dollars. Like, I don't know, whatever.
Profit and put the interest of profit over the interest of people. And that's precisely the reason why they attack people like myself, because I'm beholden to no one but my own community. I'm beholden to no one but the American working class, which, as Zoran also says, is the majority in this country.
It is indeed. Hassan Piker, I hope you have your passport updated because the new one has Trump's picture on it. I don't know if you've talked about this yet.
I have not seen it. Look, he's so handsome.
Don't lie now. Your credibility was really good up until you said that. He is not handsome. He looks crazy. And I'm thankful that my passport does not expire for like until the 2030s. Hassan Piker, I hope you'll come back. Thank you for being on, and I appreciate
it. Thank you for
having me. Thank you very much. All right, take care. Thank you. Hope you guys enjoyed that conversation. This is somebody that has been sort of portrayed as this sort of insane person, but I feel like you do have to hear people in their authentic voice. And a lot of the time, because somebody is doing their streaming, et cetera, and they're saying stuff, people are taking
it takes out of context. The clip.
There it is.
Taking it as verbatim. I actually have listened to a lot of his content. I did a lot of homework going into this to listen to the stuff that he has said. And out of context, you could take some of those clips and you could mash them together and make him look crazy. But this is somebody that actually is a very, as you could hear, very intelligent person. He's somebody who's thought a lot about foreign policy and international affairs. I don't agree with him on everything. But I do think that he's the kind of young voice that we need to take seriously. Because if we're just going to come up and harangue them about whether or not they think Hamas is bad, like, enough already with that. Every interview he's done, I've seen, it's all that. But at the end of the day, the left is what's rising because people are sick of getting screwed. They're sick of being taken to the cleaners by these big corporations, by AI companies, by billionaires, by healthcare companies. They're sick of it, you know? And not everybody who's sick of it is violent, but they're just opposed to it. So I think we need to listen to voices like that. I want to try to have more of these young voices on the show because these are the people who are talking to you, if you're my age, to your kids. That's who's talking to your grands. This is who's talking to the college students if you're a professor at your school. That's who. And so we need to talk to them. And He's got a lot of intelligent ideas. And his documentary is actually quite good. We'll put a link to it in the show. You can watch it and make your own mind up. We're not here to make up your mind for you. We're here to let you make up your mind for yourself.
Mm-hmm.